The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everybody. It is 6 p.m. on Monday. This is Para-X.com, and you are listening to the Odyssey Files with host Michael O'Neill, which is me, and on time and here early and with no Skype issues this week. We have my co-host, Mr. Dave Soering. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. It's an absolutely wonderful start to the week.
It really is. When stuff works. Yeah, I really enjoy it. And speaking of things that work, we have our guest tonight on time and here, and everything is working. We have Elizabeth Saint from Ghost of Shepherdstown. So happy to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Absolutely. If I could, I would get rid of Dave and have you be my new co-host.
Oh, Dave.
Nice. Yeah, that's nice. I see where the loyalty lies. 7 years of training, and I'm getting kicked out the door because you're better looking than me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funnier, too.
Yeah.
And with Elizabeth, she was able to smooth her way into convincing her to join us is Dana. I don't know your last name.
Dana Mitchell.
I'm a horrible host. I just realized that this instance. Dana Mitchell, also a historian from Shepherdstown. Are you
Hi.
From? Is it Jefferson County or is it Shepherdstown?
Yes, Jefferson historical. County. Well, it's Shepherdstown is the town, and Jefferson County is the county.
So. Gotcha. Okay. Perfect.
It's West Virginia. Obviously.
Yes. Wow. I had everything planned in my head, and now y'all just like threw a huge bomb into that.
It's all coming off very strange.
It is. It is very much so. But that's okay. And so I just want to dive right into it. So, Elizabeth, I went back and watched like the revisitation, you know, where I'm assuming it's the episode where they wanted to set up season two, where Chief King went around all of your former clients and then found out what was going on in like Martinsburg and whatnot. What was the premise to like bring you back? I mean, because you guys didn't know, obviously, at the time, I don't think. And so correct me if I'm wrong. But you didn't know about this dark entity and the storyline that would surface during the thing. So what actually was the reason for them bringing you guys back?
Oh, so they brought it. So Chief King, after season one of Shepherdstown aired, I mean, he pretty much had like an influx of telephone calls from everybody, whether it was paranormal or not. They felt like it was paranormal. It was worse than before, I think, ultimately because of the show. But not only that, he was also getting accounts from the surrounding towns and other officers that he knew from these surrounding towns. So that was pretty much why we came back, was to check out what was happening in the towns outside of Shepherdstown as well.
Okay, so, I mean, again, we didn't, or you guys probably didn't know about the dark entity and whatnot. So you were just brought back to just kind of try to lessen the activity, figure out what was going on.
Yeah, we had no idea about this dark entity, and we essentially came back just to figure out what was happening in the surrounding towns and kind of see if it was related at all.
Gotcha. Interesting. I noticed that I'm going to ask this question now. I'm going to bring it up later because over this past weekend, I rewatched all the episodes and I had a thought enter my head that I would like your opinion on a little later. But the paranormal team that brought you Nina's case in episode 2, were there any other paranormal teams in that area that were being called in to help, or was it just straight to Chief King?
No, that was actually a personal contact of mine that came onto that episode for Nina. You mean from the beginning, or do you mean for season 2 when we brought in the external paranormal group representative?
Season 2 when you brought in that other group.
Right, yeah. In episode 2, we went to Nina's house, and that was actually somebody that I received contact for locally. He was a local investigator that obviously, you know, through the episode we show, had been there before. I contacted a few different other groups, but that was the one we chose to utilize him and his accounts there because he had some extraordinary evidence from his experience at Nina's house.
So you actually had, like, other teams in that area, like, trying to bring you guys on for cases or bring cases to you?
Yeah. I mean, I was trying when I found out we were coming back, I was trying to collect any kind of information I could and Dana as well through people that she knew and connections she had, trying to, you know, figure out where we could go in terms of towns outside of Shepherdstown, aside from what Chief King was getting in terms of his reports. It just seemed to me to be more thorough that way, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Dana, with your involvement with season 1, did you have a lot more people coming to you for, like, trying to figure out the historical background for places, or was it pretty much quick pro quo?
I run the Shepherdstown Mysteries Walk, which is like a guided tour of the town. And a lot of people started coming on that tour to learn more about the town. But I only got a few inquiries about looking into the history of things. And I'd get a lot of people looking for genealogy. And I'm like, I'm not a genealogist.
Were you often getting, like, paranormal teams coming in and asking for your help with their cases?
Actually, no. Nobody ever asked me for my help on the paranormal cases before, but I really think it was beneficial to me as well as to them when I would do this historical research, especially, like, I do research for my walk anyway, this guided tour that I give. And if people had questions, like when I was working on the show, like Lori's mediumship, that would give me clues so that I could go look up the history of it instead of just kind of jumping into blind on a location.
Right. Speaking of Lori, Elizabeth, I don't think I ever asked, at least I don't think so. How did you get, like, connected with Lori? Because sure, her talents are phenomenal.
Yeah, she was actually a local medium in the area. I believe in season 1, Dana could probably correct me, but I believe she lived in Martinsburg. She currently lives in Maryland. Yeah. But yeah, I think at the time in season 1, she lived there.
She used to live in Shepherdstown, and then she moved to our neighboring town, Martinsburg. Yeah, now she's in Maryland, but she lived locally.
So she what's the word I'm looking for here? She was suggested or recommended. That's the word I'm looking for. She was recommended by somebody?
Yeah, I mean, I never actually asked whether she was recommended or not. I just showed up to Shepherdstown the first day. I showed up to Shepherdstown. I had dinner with Bill and Nick for the very first time. I had never, you know, spoken to either one of them before. And then, you know, I was introduced to Lori as well. That would be a part of the group. And Dana. So we all kind of came together. We weren't.
Yeah,
I wasn't involved in the logistics of it, you know.
Yeah. I was asked if I knew of any local mediums. So I gave them some suggestions, and Lori was chosen.
Nice. Good choice. Very, very good choice. I know Dave and I have even talked about this before, but we were almost hoping like Lori would know somebody in our area that we could contact that would be able to help us like she helped you.
Absolutely.
Moving on to the case itself. So you guys started out obviously at the museum, John Brown, right? John Brown Museum?
Yes.
Okay. Did you know at that time, or did you have an inkling after that case of what it would turn into?
No, I mean, I don't think any one of us could have foresaw what was actually going to happen after that case. It was quite bizarre. It was weird, you know, to come back to. A lot of people don't know. It took an entire year for Shepherdstown to come out after we had filmed season one. And then, you know, 6 months later after that, no, it was actually more than that. It was almost 2 years that right. We had been gone from the first season that had passed. It doesn't seem like that because, you know, it airs closer together, but it had been a long time. So it was weird initially to do that first investigation. It was cool to have everybody back. That being said, I had no idea what to expect. You know, as a local investigator for years in that area, I had always dreamed that one day I would have this case that would bring me to Harpers Ferry, because what I would always hear about amongst the paranormal community was Harpers Ferry, more so than, you know, Shepherdstown or any of the other towns that we went to. And I was really happy that the first case was actually going to be in Harpers Ferry. And what caught me most by surprise was that catch that Bill found, you know, during our investigation that night. It was just like, to me, it was just like a blip on the screen. And it wasn't until I slowed it down, I really had to slow it down, to which we got that image down there in the basement, which was quite bizarre to me. And just hearing these people's accounts of what they experienced at the John Brown Wax Museum, it was just like, it all of a sudden felt very different from season one altogether.
Yeah, I will grant you on that one, because season one just seemed to be, obviously it turned up a lot different, but it seemed to just be case to case to case. Like, it wasn't until, I think, you know, halfway, three-fourths way through the season that it actually seemed to have some sort of pattern to it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Things go on all over the place. People don't always report them, though. So all this activity has been going on. We're trying to follow a trail, and, you know, there's missing pieces because and time gaps, but that doesn't mean things haven't been going on all along.
Yes, that's actually...
It took us a while to find the actual, you know, basis of what was happening.
That's actually a very excellent point, and it's something I would like to address a little later. Elizabeth, I know last time that you were on the show, it was off the air because you couldn't really say very much, but I know you mentioned that you had talked to that 2,000-year-old I can't even remember what, if you called it an entity or not.
I did mention it because it totally took me by surprise when it happened. And I did mention it to you guys.
You did.
Totally,
yeah,
forgot.
You did mention it last time.
Yep.
But it was off the air.
Yes.
Because you wouldn't let us say anything
about
the season. I will admit that for a number of shows after, because I think it was in Nina's house, so episode 2 where it actually said 2000.
Yes. Yeah.
So I thought for a number of episodes after that, that maybe you were wrong. Cause you know, you said, how long were you here? Or how long have you been here? And it said 2000. And then it just kind of got changed to 2000 years. And so I was like, well, I wonder if maybe he's really saying that he's been there since the year 2000. Cause that's normally how people would answer. And, you know, maybe somebody had brought him in, you know, the year 2000. And then obviously later when it turned out that he was, you know, from centuries old and he was back in the 1700s, like, oh, well, that goes my theory. Never mind.
I see. I mean, yeah, I hear you on that. I do. It's interesting, though, because prior to that, you know, Lori kept talking about this really ancient entity. And that was kind of why, you know, I felt like it was 2000 years in terms of, you know, how long have you been here?
I fully think that you are right in that now. Because I know that as I do more and more research and learn more and more about the field, that there are entities out there who are absolutely ancient.
Right.
Huh. And you went toe to toe with it.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was very, very bizarre for us. I felt the whole time we were there, because it did just start to feel like it was following us around. And, you know, with my old paranormal team, we used to joke that, you know, we probably have entities attached to our equipment and they're just following around investigating with us, giving us answers, or just messing around with us and having good fun. And for a while there, I felt like the same thing was happening to us here, but it was honestly, it was so much, it was a lot more negative. My experiences there were just a lot more negative anytime it came forward and anytime it tried to talk to us. And I was actually haunted pretty bad during my stay in, while I was working Shepherdstown season two,
I was actually just about to ask if you had had any experiences there, or any of you had any experiences there, even Dana.
Dana, do you have any? I'm curious.
Concerning this entity or in general?
Yeah, well, in general, do you feel like let's your go activity both. Picked up? Yeah, let's say both. I'm curious. I never asked you this.
Well, you know, my house is 170 years old, and it was one of the houses used as a field hospital or infirmary. And so, yeah, there's been things here. On my walk, I take a lot of pictures. And, you know, I was always a healthy skeptic. I was always interested in the paranormal. But I was a healthy skeptic. But after working here and doing my walks and getting pictures, and my customers, my visitors, getting pictures and EVPs, I'm like 120% sure there's this unseen world around us. And, you know, as far as the entity goes, well, I'll tell you, I was sitting in the tea shop before it closed, and there was a mirror behind me, and it started violently banging on the wall. And, I mean, it wasn't like a vibration, like a truck or something drove by. It was seriously banging, and then it fell off with a crash. So
I
know that was not
that.
Yeah, I know that was not a friendly spirit in there.
That absolutely brings up another question. The tea house is now closed?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't. What? Why is the tea house closed? What the heck?
yeah, she closed after 5 months.
Oh, my God.
Well, let's get back. Does
anybody know why? I mean, was it because of that? Things like that mirror shattering, or was it like due to financial difficulties?
Perhaps a little of both. I don't want to tell tales out of school.
Yeah.
No, that's probably a good thing. Wow, I would wonder if it has something to do with that entity in any way, because I know that when a negative entity gets involved in something, bad things that seem non-paranormal start to happen. Your luck completely changes.
Right. I would agree.
I'll say this, because it's no secret. She was holding seances in there and using spirit boards.
That automatically right there is probably why she's closed after 5 months.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Yeah, never. All I can do is bow my head.
Can we ever get people to stop using spirit boards? Is that ever going to happen? Or is it just the thrill or the thought of what you might accomplish by using one that keeps luring people into that?
I don't know.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think people have the attitude, that's not going to happen to me, or I can control it. And
they find out the hard way that
other people. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. We're learning all kinds of new stuff. Even you, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's now a Veterans Arts Center.
Oh, well, that's a nice change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have they experienced any paranormal activity in the place since they switched over?
Well, they're still in the process of moving in, so I don't know.
Gotcha.
Hopefully it's nice and clear.
Maybe we have season 3 right
new
now.
New energy. Yeah.
How about Elizabeth? Have you been approached for that yet, or can you not say?
No. We haven't. I know the show did well, but we haven't been approached about that yet. But think about it. Like I said, it took a whole year for season 2 to happen. Well, geez, 2 years for season 2 to happen, so.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Very, very much. Okay. So did you feel that for season 2 that you were given, like, more freedom or more leeway with what you could and could not do?
No, I wouldn't really say that. Well, maybe a little bit, just because I was able to build equipment this time around for season 2, which was pretty awesome. But I also wasn't building paranormal equipment during season 1, so that's the only thing I would really say, was the ability to, like, build on the fly. I mean, a lot of devices I used in the episode were things that I built either that day or the day before, right before our investigation, because I really customized them to what we were dealing with at the time.
Well, we need somebody like that on our team. We need somebody who could just, like, pick up equipment and just, like, I think I'm just going to manipulate this just a little bit so that we can start seeing this one particular thing. So who do you know that has that skill in Minnesota?
I have no idea, honestly.
All right. Well, you need to do some research.
I'll look for you guys.
All right.
I was going to say, Elizabeth, the housing market here in the cities is phenomenal, in case you're interested.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, and it's a great place. It's great in the summertime for a visit, too. So.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. Well, the only reason why I asked that is I noticed that you guys were kind of allowed to show more of a sense of humor this time than last time. Maybe you guys are more comfortable with each other, and that's why. But I just noticed, like, in the very first episode where Bill's making fun of Nick's hair and his obsession with it, you know, that was something that was never seen in season 1. Like, it was all very serious. So I was actually kind of happy to see that kind of change. And I thought maybe,
they were allowing
you guys to,
we're all so crazy together. We're always laughing, having a good time. I think that, you know, we're not in control of the way the show is edited, unfortunately. So, you know, they might make it more serious in season 1 and then season 2. I mean, they really, the way they said it to us, like, they really wanted to, you know, have our personality show through more. That was important to them. So that was a decision that they made all their own. But we've always still been the same. You know, we're still just ourselves, regardless.
Okay, yeah, that was actually the best way of putting it. They allowed more of your guys' personalities to come through.
Right.
Definitely. When they just edited everything together, it was something that I know was very important to them, was to show more of that. You know, we're human beings. We're not, like, super serious 100% of the time. Even though we are dealing with serious situations, I imagine, you know, season 1, as a show in general, people are still trying to work out the kinks of everything and how they're going to condense down, you know, 5 days of investigating and interviews and research and everything that we do down into 40 minutes. I mean, that's a crazy task for anybody to do. So yeah, I know they went out of their way this time around to just make sure that that happened.
That's actually something that Dave and I have been preaching for a while is, you know, to new investigators and whatnot is remember when you're watching the show that they're taking like a week's worth of footage and shrinking it down into like 40 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you guys have like, or even Nick have any creative control whatsoever?
I mean, Nick isn't the production company on Ghost of Shepherdstown like he is with Paranormal Lockdown. I think that's a misconception a lot of people have. Like, Paranormal Lockdown is his production company. It's his show overall. 100% creative control, like, that's his thing. Shepherdstown is through a different production company. But, you know, like, that being said, they always listen to all of us in terms of our opinions and things that we think can be better. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're the paranormal researchers. We are all the investigators. This is what we do outside of the show. So, of course, they listen to us when we have suggestions about things.
Nice. So I'm glad we kind of found a way to schmooze our way into the production company and just kind of how, because I know we talked about this off the air, but for whatever, like I went to try to find the YouTube video of the episode 7 from season 1, the one where Chief King was going through all of the former clients, and I was like shocked by like the first 3 or 4, and then like the there was one that was kind of what I wanted, and then another 3 or 4. It was all Ghost of Shepherdstown is staged and fake, and Ghost of Shepherdstown is proved debunked. And I'm like, where did all this come from? Because I've watched every episode of season 1 on YouTube, and those were not there. And so that was like blowing my mind. I know that Nick has talked about it and whatnot, but the saying of some locations and some of the stories were changed because the producers, quote unquote, wanted to make like a better TV show. What is your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think that Dana, did you want to chime in at first?
Sure. Well, first of all, the person that they quoted is saying that they didn't even interview. That was the director of our visitor center, and they didn't even interview her. And what she had said was taken out of context and was referring to the reenactments. They couldn't do the reenactments in some of the locations because things had changed in the past 100 or 200 years. So, you know, it had nothing to do with the investigations or those locations themselves.
Yeah,
and I think that's what, you know, unfortunately it was taken out of context, which was really, really hard because, you know, she didn't know that she was quoted as saying these things. Nick and I actually called her that day when the news came out, and it was ironic to me that it's right before the air date of season 2 of Ghost of Shepherdstown. None of this had been talked about, you know, for the past 2 years. But suddenly,
right,
it was coming out in the moment right before the air date of Shepherdstown, which I thought was really ironic. But we all work incredibly hard on the show, and that's the honest truth. You know, Dana with her research, I mean, honestly, we could not have the show without Dana. And then on top of that, yeah. And then on top of that, like you know, our investigations, we take very seriously. I mean, that is like our time to shine, so to speak. And we all work really hard on the show to figure all these things out. And the irony and the connections we come across sometimes honestly floor me. But I think that's been my most favorite part about working on Shepherdstown, too, is like digging up the past and being able to retell these stories of these people from the past with these beautiful period reenactments that they do. Unfortunately, with the period reenactments, which we are never a part of, they're shot on separate days, you know, separate weeks when we're not even in town. You know, unfortunately, you know, these are actual actors in the industry that go and they put on these period pieces and play these period characters, and they have IMDb's, and that's also been an issue that's come up as well. And it's just unfortunate that it's all taken out of context. But every paranormal show that you watch has people that do reenactments of other people's situations.
Exactly. Yes.
This is how it goes.
Yep.
And these investigators, when they, and I tell this to the people on my walk who have questions, when they would go into a location or wherever, they were going in cold, and they would be there for 12 to 15 hours. And then they'd come back and be in there another 12 to 15 hours. So what you're seeing in that 40 minutes of television, you know, the 20 minutes of commercials and the recaps, you know, is only the tip of the iceberg of the amount of work and research and investigation that the team puts into it.
Oh, absolutely. As a director of a paranormal team myself up here in the cities, Dave and I can both fully, you know, get behind the fact that, yeah, the investigation might only last 5 hours, but then, you know, you're not counting the 40 hours of evidence review, the walkthrough, the research, the any solution, and like all of that. I mean, each case is like 60 hours of work.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's every bit of that. Yeah, it's every bit of that.
Dana, I was actually, I've been waiting for a time to ask you this, which is perfect time right now. How much time does it usually take you to do all of that research? Because you have to dig deep a lot.
Well, sometimes I find things right away, and sometimes I just search and search and search, and it could take weeks. To find just that one little thing or one little opening. And once I find that opening, you know, then the rest falls into place. But I start out, I can tell you my process if you're interested.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I start out, the first thing I do is just an internet search. I subscribe to a number of resources like newspapers.com, but, you know, subscription, ancestry.com. I just start out there. They have so much. You look at the U on a person, you look at a U.S. census, it'll tell you where they lived, when they lived, what their occupation was, who else was living with them, who, you know, and then from there you can go on, you can find out their whole family, you can find out addresses. Then I would go to the courthouse and I'd look up deed records, I'd look up tax records, you don't have to reinvent the wheel and just go through every file in the courthouse. You can just start out with ancestry.com, newspapers.com, and census.com.
Dana, do you stay in Jefferson County, or can you branch out, like, say, to Minnesota when it comes to history?
Well, it's so much work, and a lot of it was legwork. I mean, I spent hours going through microfilm in the library, so I kind of stick to this area.
Probably, yeah. A good call, but you can't fault me for trying.
Yeah, I know. I mean, hours going through old newspapers on microfilm, I'd feel like my head was going to explode.
Sounds like it. All right, yeah. So I almost forgot that we have to take a commercial break. Oops,
yep.
My bad. So we're going to do that really quick. Then we'll be back in, I don't know, 2.5 minutes, something like that. You're listening to The Odyssey Files on Para X.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock. The Dark Sun Rising on the Para-X Radio Network.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
This is Master Tarot Card Reader Ken Bogle, and I highly encourage you to tune in every Monday night to the ParaX Radio Network for the ParaCave, hosted by Matt Gesso, as he goes in search of the truth in the supernatural, metaphysical, mystic, and paranormal. Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the ParaX Radio Network. I never miss it, and neither should you.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making ParaX part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, ParaX.
And we're back. And our guests tonight are Dana Mitchell, got that down, and the ever-wonderful Miss Elizabeth Saint from Ghost of Shepherdstown. I mentioned earlier in the show about asking about the paranormal teams and whatnot. I was going to bring it up later, and I'd like to do that right now, just to get your take on something. So the whole premise of season two, from the first episode to the last episode, was you tracking case by case this negative entity that was going from pretty much town to town until you stopped whatever it was trying to do, and then it left and went someplace else. If you hadn't been brought in, let's just say you guys had not been brought in by the police, and and I know Dana even mentioned it earlier that, you know, this could have been going on the entire time, but they just finally started calling in to the police department. If the people that started calling in to the police department had called, like, different paranormal teams in the area and not you guys, do you think that you could have solved that case? Like, you would have been able to at least for now fix everything?
You mean if they just used a team and a team tried to do the same thing?
Well, yeah, but I mean not only that, but I mean, like, this guy was going from town to town to town.
Right.
This dark entity. As I was watching the show this weekend, and I just couldn't help but realize that all of these clues that you were getting, and you were getting these different, I know Nick mentioned it as a big jigsaw puzzle, and it came from all of these different cases. And
right.
I couldn't help but think of, if something like that were to happen up here, like in Minnesota, the Twin Cities probably has 15 different paranormal teams, if not more than that. So if an entity was going from the south side to the north side to the east, you know, all over each of these different towns, would anybody be able to figure it out if each of these cases called a different team?
I think that makes it hard, honestly, because here's a crazy example. Bill and I, both paranormal teams out of Maryland, I had never crossed paths with him. I'm sure we have done a lot of the same cases, but we never communicated amongst people in the same, that had paranormal groups out of the same area. Everyone's teams were very personal. You might hear from the owner that, oh, we've had a few paranormal teams in here and this is what they found. But we would never collaborate or, you know, we'd never reach out to other local teams and see if they've had similar cases or stuff like that. I think, like, that's honestly, I think sometimes that's a missing link amongst the teams in general. I don't know if it's like a competitive thing or if I think it makes it hard, especially when you're dealing with West Virginia, Maryland, Virginia. We can even add DC in there. Everything is so close, but you're dealing with four totally different states, which would mean you're essentially dealing with, you know, four different teams that probably never communicate with each other. I don't think that they'd find the same things out. I think it would be really hard. I think the key ingredient a lot of times was Chief King being based in Shepherdstown, having season one come out. And then, you know, the cops are pretty close in that area. Because it is a small town. So I think that was, like, unless they had that direct connection, I don't know if necessarily that would have happened.
And not to toot my own horn, but to toot my own horn. I mean, or any historian's horn. I really think, because I did deep research, and I think you really have to have that. I think, you know, you can look up local history, but it's going deeper than that. As I was doing my research on each of these locations, I remember, I mean, the sequence that we investigated them might not have been the sequence that they were actually happening in. I think all this stuff was just, you know, going on, but of the people that, you know, called and reported it was in their own order. But I started noticing this Catholic connection. But in every single one of those locations, there was a Catholic connection to it. And, you know, that just, it was information I don't think you would just randomly find or randomly figure out. So I think a historian's place with working with the investigators adds another piece to the puzzle.
Hey, Dana.
Yeah.
So can you elaborate a little bit on what you're talking about with the Catholic connection at each location?
Well, I mean, it was pretty much figured out that this entity had been probably banished or exorcised by Father Cahill originally. And something stirred it up. Something made it come back. So you have to remember, back in the 1700s and even the 1800s here in this part of the country, Catholicism, it was not big. There were not a lot of Catholics. The first Catholic church actually built in Shepherdstown was in 1889. I think the first Catholic church in Martinsburg was 1825. So back in the 1700s, there weren't many Catholics here, and even throughout. So noting that these different locations that we were investigating, there was this Catholic connection, like, was helping me look into the next case that, you know, they would give me to research. I would look for that connection to see if that connection was there.
Okay.
So another investigative group might not have been looking for that and not be able to put that all together. Does that make, am I clear? Am I just rambling?
No, absolutely. Yep. I'm picking up everything exactly that you're laying down, Dana.
Yep.
It, let me just, for the record, say that I don't know why I just said that. But
well, I mean, for example, and this I don't even believe was mentioned in the show, but Boydville, the original owner was Elijah Boyd, but then it was taken over by the Faulkners. The Faulkners, James Faulkner was like kind of the adopted ward of Richard McSherry, who was the person that brought Adam Livingston to Shepherdstown and introduced him to Father Cahill. Also on that same Boydville property is right next to a Catholic cemetery, which at one time was all part of the Boydville property, and also there had been a Catholic school on the property. And
Is that the same one that we visited that day together? The St. Peter's?
No, that's in Harper's Ferry. St. Peter's is Harper's Ferry.
Gotcha.
Hmm. So.
And so unless you really, I mean, did deep research, you wouldn't realize that connection. And, of course, Nina Cruz had her rosaries that were broken. I mean, we never discussed religion with her or what her religion was, but the fact that she was using rosaries, you know, indicated she was Catholic. Who was the guy, Percy Snyder, who burned in the fire at the Opera House? We didn't talk about him too much on the show, but he was buried in the Catholic cemetery. Yeah. And, you know, as we went around, they're at the tea house. That's where the Catholic Mass was held before there was a church in the town. Just, you know, name one, and I'll tell you the connection.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Hey, backtracking just a little bit. Elizabeth, I just got a question for you, like, not about the show, but just about investigating and when you're, you know, your time with the paranormal team.
Yeah.
So do you find that if you go to a, if you go to a client's house or go to a, now are we, when you had, we had talked or just a little bit earlier when we were talking about that, when you said, you know, that other teams have been there and you'd never seen or run across other people, are you talking about like locations that are like public locations that are haunted, or are you referring to like private cases, like private residence cases?
Both. Most of the time we would do private residence cases, and they would say, you know, we've had local teams come in here. But then also we do what we like to call expeditions, which would be, you know, public historical sites in which we were granted access to investigate.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's basically what we're doing too. So that's good. So my question is for you, do you find that if you go into a case that has had, you know, let's say two or three other paranormal teams in there. So if you can kind of think about that and then go to, and then kind of compare that to if you were the first team that was called like to a private residence, do you see any difference in the amount of activity or the level of activity, based on how many teams might have already been there before you?
Yes. I mean, I might not personally witness that, but I've heard so many times from clients, you know, them say, we brought this team in here and activity seemed to stir up even more after that point, or something else had been happening. I think that they're, and I don't want to just like throw people under the bus by saying that, but I think it does happen regardless of whether you're just investigating or whether you try to go and actually cleanse the place or do something about it. I think that it's just something that happens when you bring a bunch of people into your house anyway. So you don't know what kind of things that they're bringing along with them into your space. Right. And then on top of that, you're trying to directly communicate with whatever is there. And you don't know the methods in which people do things. I think there's so many unknowns. But yes, I've found plenty of times where that happens. It's usually, you know, it's hard for me. I've actually been on very few cases where they haven't already brought somebody in or they haven't tried to do some sort of occult practice themselves. And we don't find that out until we talk to them further.
Right. Right. Yeah, I was just curious because I, you know, we kind of run into that too here. And it seems like at times things can be like really ramped up by somebody previously going in there before us and not really, I think they're just adding fuel to the fire, I guess, is kind of where I'm headed with that.
Yeah. 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 And it's so hard to say. I mean, you know, so many of us are passionate about this field and there's not necessarily any right or wrong way to go about it. Cause you know, it's not like we have some sort of standards.
Oh, right, exactly.
So, you know, it's like kind of free domain in that regard. But yeah, I think regardless of your intentions, it seems to just happen.
Yep, I would agree. I was just curious if you would run into that too. I was just
you know, definitely
trying to correlate that to us and our investigations here in the Twin Cities and local areas around here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even think about this, you know, episode 2 was done at Nina's house. That Nina's house was actually done on a haunted collector episode, right? They found that bullet on their property and removed the bullet from the property. And what's interesting is when we were there, none of the activity had anything to do with, you know, any kind of soldiers or that bullet or anything like that. So it's like they kind of took care of one aspect of what was going on there. But then when we came in, there was something else completely different that was happening at the same time. And it was like pulling back layers, in my opinion. You know, when they went there, they pulled back one and then, you know, it just revealed another that we came in and we were able to deal with.
Right.
Do you think maybe that previous investigation there, as obviously I didn't know that was on an episode of Haunted Collector. Do you feel that maybe they opened the door for this?
No, I think like I said, I think that when they came, they dealt with one very specific issue that they were having at the time with the soldier and the bullet being brought into their house from their property they found in the backyard. And that could have been masking all the other things happening at that time. And then, you know, once they removed it, things might have died down a little bit, but then there were still underlying issues that hadn't been taken care of yet. And it just gave the opportunity for those to come through as well. I believe it was still all happening on that location. It was just like they took care of a little bit and we took care of a little bit. And all we can hope for now is that, you know, she doesn't have any more problems that, to deal with in the future.
Well, I feel also these cave systems that are all under this part of the state, right, and the limestone that's everywhere. My house is built on a rock quarry. And the water, I think these things can, particularly that entity, could rise and retreat at its will. You know, so it might not always have been present when other investigators were there. It could, and that's why I think it would go to these different locations. I don't think necessarily it was always at the same place, you know, all the time.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Dana, and we've seen that before where, you know, you could go in there and the homeowner might be experiencing all this stuff and you come in and there's like absolutely nothing, you know, and then we'll reschedule, you know, we'll say, okay, well, we didn't find anything, but, you know, we might go back a second time. And the next time we go back for some reason, it kind of, whatever the thing that's there is, gets kind of defensive. So maybe it recognizes us coming back again. And says, okay, you know, right, the first time they left and it wasn't a big deal and I fooled them and blah, blah, blah. But now they're back. And so obviously they're serious about this. So now it's time to potentially engage in some type of fight, you know. And we've seen that happen more than once. So I totally agree with you on that. You know, run and hide aspect and movement and travel. Absolutely.
Well, I think in particular the entity they were dealing with was very strong and had intelligence. You know, it wasn't like my house, which I said was used as a field hospital. I'd get banging on the doors all hours of the day and night, really hard banging on, and you'd go to the door, of course, and nobody was there. And this went on and on and on. And one early Saturday morning, my husband said to me, would you tell your ghost to let us sleep? And it's never happened again.
Well, that's good.
So that was easy to get rid of. I kind of miss it. But that one, you know, was perhaps residual when they were bringing a wounded person to the house or whatever. That was, I mean, he didn't even directly say, be gone. You know, he said, just tell your ghost to let us sleep. And it's never happened again. And, you know, that's when it was quite frequent. But something like this, I think, was an intelligence. It probably did get to the point where it was like, well, I'll have to show them who's...
Right. Who's no more running type boss. Of thing. Yeah.
I have to chime in really quickly.
Yeah.
So I have 2% battery life and I'm on location right now. So there is a chance that you might lose me in the next 5 minutes.
Okay.
Well, that's good because we only have about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
Well, then I have two questions for you, Liz. You've been involved with Ghost of Shepherdstown, obviously, you know, your exposure and whatnot and your schedule has gone through the roof with being busy and whatnot. And the cases, you know, even involving the ones in Shepherdstown that you've been on, have you noticed anything the last couple of years that cases just in general are getting darker or there's just more of them than there used to be, like maybe 10 years ago?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I talked about this actually on the season finale of Shepherdstown. You know, 10 years ago, I would absolutely, even 5 years ago, I would hands down say I did not feel comfortable ever mentioning my paranormal experiences to people. I just didn't, you know. I mean, you get ridiculed a lot, especially coming from a engineering scientific background. It was just not something I shared with my coworkers. That being said, I think over the past 5 to 10 years, a lot more people have opened up to the possibilities of things happening around them, having experiences. That veil seems to be thinning between our world and whatever other worlds are out there, because we're only experiencing a small percentage of what is actually comprises this world, you know. And I think the more people have experiences, the more people get involved in this field, the more you have people dabbling and the more energy you have just flowing around and potentially manifesting these things that didn't exist before.
So do you think that the paranormal being thrust into like the mainstream kind of site and whatnot is kind of causing like a causality loop where everything is just reinforcing the rest?
I think the fact that it has become more popular makes it very difficult, definitely. I think it would be ridiculous for me to say it doesn't attribute to it, you know, because it's out there in the public. It's quote unquote thought to be cool. I think you can say all of these things and say that it attributes somehow because more people are intrigued, interested in getting involved. I can't tell you how many events I go to now where the majority of people that come to them that participate in the investigation portion of the event, this is like their first time investigation. Like that intrigue is all of a sudden there for people. A lot of times it's people that you would have not expected to be on these investigations 5, 10 years ago. Like I've been on investigations now with doctors and scientists and like people, the engineers and people that are very logical minded people. But that intrigue is there amongst everybody now, I think.
Yeah. On the walks that I do, a lot of my my visitors that I take on the walk all have their K2 meters and recorders and a little their laser grid lights bring with them. So, yeah, it is become more mainstream, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It definitely has. Okay, so we got about 5 minutes left. So before we lose Elizabeth, Elizabeth, why don't you start? But why don't you just tell people kind of, I mean, minus where you are right now, kind of some of the events and stuff coming up, which unfortunately doesn't involve Paracon here in Minnesota in a month. But that's okay.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we are too.
I wish I could be there.
You could be.
I know.
Amy Gallen canceled, you know, so there's a spot open.
Man.
why don't you just give some events and stuff that you'll be up, and then Dana, why don't you talk about your tour and whatnot afterwards?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So then the next event, a couple events I have coming up, I have one in Utah, in Sandy, Utah, the weekend of October 7th. October 14th, I go to the Little Traverse Bay Parafest in Michigan. And then there's a few others that I have posted on my website after that. And you can go to elizabethsaint.com and click on upcoming events to see them. And then aside from that, I've been working really hard building new devices and equipment for exciting upcoming episodes of Paranormal Lockdown. So that's kind of been my life over the past month, which has been really fantastic. Continuing to work with Nick over the past 3 years and trying to kind of push the paranormal forward and introduce things, ideas, and concepts that haven't been tried before.
Hey, real quick, when are you sending us your personal choice of equipment to field trial?
Oh, man. Soon.
She was hoping we forgot about that, Dave.
No, yeah, I did not forget.
She was hoping we forgot about it, but I'm not forgetting about it. So, and you did say you were going to send us one and that we were going
to
try.
Yes, I definitely have to.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I plan on it.
Okay.
Dana, so you have your tour. How would people contact you about that?
Well, it's Shepherdstown Mysteries Walk, and that's a mysteries, not mystery, because a story can be told, but a mystery must be experienced. So we go on the mysteries walk.
Nice. I like that.
Great, great slogan there, Dana.
So you can look on Facebook under Shepherdstown Mysteries Walk or ShepherdstownMysteriesWalk.com and find me there. And it's an hour and a half that usually lasts longer tour. We go through the back streets of the town and a couple of graveyards, and it's a lot of fun because I'm a lot of fun.
She is. We call her, little fun fact, we call her Sexy G on the show because she is the most stylish person there.
Very nice. Okay, so that's going to do it for us tonight. I obviously want to thank Dana and Elizabeth for joining us tonight. It was, as always, an absolute pleasure. So Dave, I think that does it for us.
It does. I just also want to chime in real quick and just say thank you for being on the show, guys. I appreciate it. It was
thank
really,
you.
Really interesting stuff. So,
thank you for having me. Nobody ever calls me.
I remember now, Dana. Absolutely.
Thanks
All right,
for
everybody.
Me.
Have yourselves a good night.